Session number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, Reel 23.
Mr. Ray, Reel 23, you were describing the setup at Takoradi.
Yeah.
You'd like to continue?
The administration buildings were made of breeze blocks, wooden doors and louvre windows. That was administrative stuff. We had the RSM's room, the orderly room, the CO's, the sales compartment, and we had the adjutant's room, all in one block. And that was, and that's right. Now then,
and the rest were mud huts.
A company office was at one end of that block. B company was B, C, M, G, at D company. And headquarters, they had blocks, administrative blocks, just administrative blocks. Their company office and Seacombe's office and his storerooms, they were separate. Now, the natives, they were in the same kind of buildings as ourselves. Now, theirs were situated at the back of the blocks in rows, by companies, and they were mud huts, the same as ours. From the front of the administration blocks, we had one huge parade ground, and the guard room was at the bottom of the parade ground, and it was all fenced off. We crossed over the road, and it was a broad track, went up towards our own gitters on the hillside. Now gitters, all the NCOs and the officers were all in lines. The guard, didn't matter about what company, NCOs, one to a gitter. They were circular huts.
What were they like to live in?
Lovely and cool.
Better than the bungalows?
Yes, I'll tell you why. The bungalows had a corrugated roof, and these gidders which had circular roofs, and they had thick thatches on about 3 feet thick, and they were attached to struts inside, in a conical shape. The walls themselves was 2 feet thick,
and
made of mud bricks. And whitewashed. You had one door in and another one at the other side, and attached like an umbilical to the place. You had a place where your servant used to be in there, and you could have a bath in there as well, you see, a bath place. That was completely covered. And one window in there, a louvre window. The floor was concrete, circular concrete, and we equipped with electric light inside. Everybody had electric lighting, run off the mains, you know. And we had our camp beds. We used our own camp beds.
So for mud huts, they were pretty sophisticated, you know.
Yeah. And you could get little bits of furniture, a stool, you know, a shanty stool for about £5 from the market to sit on, or a chair if you wanted, one made out of teak. teak wood. Some used to have them made out of bamboo, like you've seen bamboo chairs, something like that with a big canopy at the back, so to get the one in. I managed to have a wardrobe made. It was all carved, handmade by the carpenter down in the town. That one cost me £2. That was made of solid teak. I'd had carved legs on as well, like claws, one in each corner at the bottom, for my uniforms would be put in. And a small set of drawers. I left all them behind when we moved out.
Had you taken your car with you from Acca?
I sold it.
So when you left the fort, you sold it?
I sold it.
How much did you get for it?
£70.
So you made a fair profit there?
Yeah. I sold it to one of the nurses, European nurses.
Was that because you realised you wouldn't be at Tacredi that long?
Yeah, well, I knew. I knew it was something in the wind.
Now, you'd gone to... you were in the 6th Battalion Gold Coast Regiment, Coastal Defence. You know. And you were in A Company.
Yeah.
And you were Company Sergeant Major, were you?
Yeah. Captain Cave, he was my company commander. And... forget the second in command, a nice fellow. I didn't care much for Captain K because he came from he blew himself anyway. He come from with his, he was a solicitor or a barrister by profession, you know. Even when he used to say, well, Sergeant Major, will you take a note? He used to march up and down in the company office, his hands behind his back, you know. Thought he was back in his office. And to OCB Company, reference your letter dated so and so and so and so, and I can do it all quick, like you know, pen it up. And why did you request so and so, form B so and so, you know what I mean? Towards the fact that we cannot expedite. On your request for immediate attention, but we'll more or less send this form or whatever you want as soon as possible, ASP, you know, as soon as possible, signed Captain Cave. Will you get that done in duplicate, Sergeant Major? Yes, sir. Tear that off, go and get some copies made by the local typewriter, the typist. Get, you know, come back, you'd sign it. Oh, very good, thank you. And we took him on a route march. He would never come out. While I was taking his company on parade, you know, for drill, he would never come out. He might look through the window, you know.
So he didn't come out and see and mix with the men?
No, he never come out once to stand with his hands behind his back, you know. Just like to listen in and watch. And he used to be in his office with his second in command.
Who was the second in command?
Captain Howlett. He was second in command of the colonel. I'm starting to think of my second commander's captain, lieutenant or captain's. He was a great, great little fella. Bags of common sense.
So, what your job as company sergeant made, you'd still be on drill a lot, but you were doing some office admin.
Oh, yes. Company strengths and all that, you know. And, anyway.
What was the colonel was?
Colonel Hilliard, he belonged to King's Own.
What was he like?
Oh, grand. He was tough. He used to come out and get a bit of fresh air and just watch himself. And could dodge back, he could see everything was happening because he had a big window and he didn't bother. I think he got up to ease his backside, you know, and he walk up and down and look and go back in.
And here you'd carry on whipping your company up. This, you'd now just be doing A Company, would you?
Yeah.
And this is where you met this, you had an example you wanted to tell me about. Yeah. Tell us the full story then about it.
In the meantime, the older room colour sergeant, he was a he's a Frenchman, and but he'd been in England a long time. He was born in England. They call him Turpin, Robert Turpin. And he took over from Ordnance Colonel Sergeant Ellis. He went for to be an officer. And the same thing applied to Bob Turpin, but he was the RCS then. Anyway, A Company was straight in line with the BHQ administrative buildings. And this big bloke, he came onto our veranda, and I saw him pass. And I just got up off my chair, and I went through, and I said, "Who are you? What do you want?" He couldn't answer me, and he was massive. You've seen Cassius Clay, haven't you? He had a build like that, muscular. You know, thin waist, broad shoulders. He just like he carved out of black marble. And he started talking like, and I thought, I couldn't understand his language. So I said, "We've got a stranger outside, Mr. Howlett." Said, "Come and have a look at him."
Now, had this bloke would just come on spec? He hadn't been recruited then, he was just there.
He came on his own. He came on his own to be a soldier. Nobody knew where he come from. Till later on, he must have travelled hundreds of miles on foot to come to be a soldier.
So you went to the other sergeant?
I went down, I went and had a poke round, and I got my sergeant major, used to be my sergeant major, and said, "Come and see this man." I said, "Can you talk to him?" The sergeant major started talking in different dialects, and all he could say, "Yes, sir, no, sir." That's the two words he could speak. And I said, "I think he wants to be a soldier. He wants to be in there." I said, so Captain Howlett. And he said, "We'll have a look at this man, sir, down here." And he's a specimen. "Do you think we could get him in to be a soldier?" And he kept pointing to the men on parade, you see, like that.
Pointing to himself and then at them?
Yes. And, he said, "I talked to the CO, and the CO had looked through the window and said, 'My God, what a specimen.'" He stuck his moustache out. "What a specimen. Rather, let's have him, we'll have him in there." And put a phone to quartermaster. He sent somebody up, took him down, got him rigged out, put him in a hut behind, you know what I mean, in the lines. Got him with the crowd, you know, and get his food and things like that. And the sergeant major and the sergeants, anyway, they put him right, put his kit on, and showed him roughly what to do. He put his things in boots, and he took him on parade in A Company. It was in A Company. And I was in A Company still at that time. Yes, I was. And we put him amongst the men.
He still didn't know where he came from.
I took him to see Bob, Bob Turpin. He was at RCS. I said, "Bob," I said, "look," I said, "can he come out here?" I said, "we've got a stranger here." I said, "he didn't understand any words of the Hausa language. I don't know where he's come from. Can you give a bit power? You might belong to the French side. I only started talking to him in French, and no, couldn't register anything there. Anyway, we got amongst some of the lads, you know what I mean, and we couldn't do anything with them in the ranks at all, you know, not much. He was trying his best, and when he went, he was visibly frightened to death.
He was shaking,
aye, and he stood out head and shoulders above the rest. He stood like a sore thumb, you know. So I said, at night time, I went in the mess, and I said to my mate Ginger, I said, Ginger, I've got a bloke there, he's just come down from the bush, we don't know where he's come from. I said, the key to the problem is language. He said, do you mind tomorrow on parade if I fetch him down to your company and let your men parley, see if there's anybody in your company can run him?
So none of yours?
No, they couldn't, no. So I said, I don't mind, yeah, you can do that if you want, Jim. Right, so in the meantime, company commander said to me, he said, Sergeant Major, he said, if you can make a soldier out of him, he says, I don't know, so I'll tell you what, I'll bet you a bottle of whiskey. I'll bet you a bottle of whiskey I'll make a soldier of him. He says, it's on. Right. The next morning, a soldier, you know, took him out the ranks, and let the others carry on, and I took him down to Ginger. And Ginger looked up and down and said, oh, I got a bloody giant, isn't he? I said, yeah. I said, I want to keep this fella. He's great, isn't he? So we took him down, and the sergeant major spoke to the Ginger's African sergeant major, spoke to the whole of the company. Said, now we're going to take this man down. I know we want each man in where he can to speak any the language. Speak talking different languages. The languages you know and you're obvious. They could speak Twi, Ga, and all sorts, you see. And I took him up and I went down, started from the right down to the left. And I got halfway down. And Ginger had a little one. And he started talking. And he started talking back. Ta 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 ta, you know. That's him, Ginger. I said, can I borrow him? He said, you can't. I said, well, what can I do? I said, he said straight away, you can't. He says, I'll have a blank file then. I said, well, I'll tell you what. If you see the old company commanders, I'll lend you one for one to keep your numbers right and keep the file right. Right, okay. Well, okay, we'll go and arrange it. So we took Dogo de Garty and put him out the road out. And I saw my company commander, got the arrangement, and I went down with Ginger and I got his company commander to make the arrangements for a swap over, just for the time being. And we did that. It was part exchange, that's all. And you know, when I got him in there, I made sure that little fella was that big man's shadow. Wherever he went, that little one went with him. Closest peas in the pod, I wouldn't have them separated. They lived together. They went in the same gate together so they could talk, keep talking. And it progressed from there, the language key problem. So anyway, we got him, and we got him shaped up, and we made him with 100% in the company, and we had to draft some soldiers away. I think actually where they went to, went to fight the Aitais, Italian Somaliland. That's where they went. Anyway, they sent this big fella. I was sorry to see him go, like, but he could talk pidgin English even. He was smart. You couldn't keep him down. However, sometime later.
So you'd won your bet?
Wait a bit, sometime later, he came back and he was a sergeant. He had a big red sash on. And he come back and he stood on the veranda. I said, well, come on over, I've got him, Mr. Harvard. He said, well, he said, you've done a good job there. He says, I said, I've won my bet, haven't I? He says, you have, and I look at the bottom of the whisker. He said, I never thought he'd do it. I said, that's it. Only the language problem. Confidence was there. He had everything. Just the language. Oh, all right. Come up to our mess, and he said, and you can have a bottle of whiskey. So I got the bottle of whiskey, shook hands. Fair bet, yes, sir. Are you going up? No, I'm going to take it back for the lads. Go on then, I'll have a drink some other time.
Did you get on well with your officers then?
Yeah, I should think so. All right, well, Captain Kerr was a bit of a problem because we went on a route march. And if he'd been a dedicated officer, he'd been watching all the manoeuvres there was on the parade ground. Anyway, I formed them up and moved to the right. And column of threes, right turn, lead off by platoons. By the left, quick march, platoons followed. Took them on the main road, we were all right. First hour, 10 minutes spell. Went out another hour. Quarter of an hour rest. Brought them back in a circular route. Bit rest, you know. Put them up together. I left quick march. I get them all in step. We came through the barrack gates. Normally, you say to company commander, well, sir, take over now, because he generally takes them up and leads them on parade for dismissal. Very good. Marched on, he come out the front, and he started to give the cavalry commands. Well, I mean, the men didn't know what to do. The first six or two, and we were studying. I've never heard that command before. As a matter of fact, I hadn't, because I wasn't a cavalryman. Number one troop will we regail on the left and on the left, tighten on markers, and so and so. And made the left turn, and the others went up, and they were shuffling around. They didn't do, and it was all a bit of a shambles. And the CO was standing on the veranda. Anyway, I got them whipped up, and right dress, put the markers out, got them all still. Dismissed the parade now, sir, I said. Yes. Company, attention. Dismissed, salute like it, one thing. Marched off. So anyway, I didn't know. Next morning, Captain Kerr was in office. Sergeant Major. Yes, sir. I want you. Yes, sir. What's the matter, sir? What's the matter? You made me look an utter fool yesterday. I said, why, sir? What happened to the company when I brought them up into the parade ground? I said, they're a bit of a shambles, sir. Why? I said, you were giving them cavalry commands. not infantry battalion command, sir. Oh, I said, I'm all right. I said, I could take them and do them myself. Take them off, put them on anywhere you like, take them battalion. And to the company commander, and I said that they were not used to cavalry words of command. I said it was an infantry battalion, not a cavalry. I said, yes. I said, and I'm very sorry, but he said, how was I to know that you were in a cavalry regiment or corps, sir? I didn't ask where you come from or what you were or what you could do. I said, I only know what I thought you could do when you came to an infantry battalion, because it's different to being in a horse regiment. Oh, yes, I'm quite well aware of the fact. I said, well, sir, sometimes, sir, I take the company on parade and I take them off parade and I put them back on parade. And you'd have heard the words of command. As if to say, you'll be sitting there, you know, whatever he was doing, and not taking particular attention to what was happening on the square with his company. Oh, very well then, Sergeant Major. I said, well, I'll take them tomorrow, sir, as his company. You can stand on the veranda and watch what I do and my words of command. He said, what do you do with that? I said, well, I take them on parade almost every at least twice a week. Oh, yes. Oh, all right then, Sergeant Major. All right. So I did that. And he stood there. I had them all lined up on the company. I took them all the lot en masse out of the parade ground in company, and advancing in threes in column. Took them out, short walk round, and wrote them back. Through the gate, same as I did with them the day previous. And I shouted as loud as I could the words of command, and got the company back into formation, and I dismissed them. And when I went back into the off parade, like back into the office, oh, he said, he said, I heard the words of command. He said, would you mind writing out the words of command for me so I can get them in my mind? I said, yes, sir. So I put it down, you know. Company at the halt, facing left, form close column of platoons. So first platoon sergeant, left wheel. Mark time, halt. Next platoon went on, left wheel, mark time, halt. Next platoon, left wheel, mark time, halt. Then we're in the middle. Company will advance, left, turn. They all turned facing me then. Company, stand at ease. Fall out the sergeants. And it came to me. Company, dismiss. They didn't salute because there was an officer on parade. Turned smartly to the right. Didn't salute because you don't if there's no officer on parade. And marched off by the tombs. Back to the off parade. As simple as that.
How about with the African troops? You were still getting on very well with them.
Yeah.
Did they have a nickname for you?
I don't know. I used to sing a nasty little dirty song.
What was that?
I don't know what was really. Winnie went on, Winnie, Winnie went on, Winnie, Winnie went on, Winnie went on, too many that, too many chump, too many chump.
What did that mean?
I don't know. The sergeant major wouldn't tell me. I said, what is that? He started laughing and went, that means not very nice.